All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So Carson Price for Thursday, March 14th, 2024, coming to you from the Go-Go Sports Studio built by Arbor Lee here at the Iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver. If you're going to a game or an event downtown, make it a staycation. Call the wall, 604-331-1000. You can ask for the Carson Price rate. Some blackout dates apply. Matt Sakaris alongside Blake Price, Grady Sass, hitting switches, conducting things in this big show brought to you by Applewood Auto Group.
And not everybody needs big, right? So Applewood Nissan in Surrey's got the Qashqai, which is still built for BC. It's got all the durability you want out of a Nissan, and yet you can park it in Vancouver, which is nice. Go get your own Qashqai right now. The 23s are still available with financing at 2.99% for up to 36 months. It's all good at Applewood.
You're going to want that Qashqai if you're parking here at Wall Center.
Yes.
Narrow spots. Yeah. Some people struggle with them.
The cameras get a lot of use.
If not for the cameras, I'm not sure how people could park in some of these spots.
Nobody parked here up until 2014.
Tim Horton's poll question today. We're asking you if the Canucks' record against Colorado gives you concern for the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're doing so because the Canucks fall to 0-2-1 against Colorado. We went into Wednesday's game at Rogers Arena talking about, look, last chance to get a victory against every team in the Western Conference. Only two teams have swept the Canucks this year, Philadelphia, and there's nothing you can do about that. Both games are in the books. There was something they could do about 0-2 against Colorado, and through much of the hockey game, it looked like they would with a 3-0 lead. Alas, they give up four unanswered, lose 4-3 in overtime. So yes or no, voting at Sakarison Price on Twitter and YouTube. And Roll Up is here. Roll Up to Win is here for Tim's 60th anniversary. Play on the Tim's app. Daily cash jackpot, $10,000. You can win the all-electric Volkswagen ID.4 and a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Roll Up is on until March 31st.
Shorty or Ray that said at 3-0, I believe. One of them mentioned, after a good Canuck chance, like, you know, you just keep going here because extending the lead
all
is
gas,
always a good
no
idea.
No break, yep.
Like, you know, there's no resting on the laurels of a 3-0 lead, and they came close. There was one good chance to make it 4-0, and you wonder how that changed. There's so many points in the game, Matt, where you think, if that does or doesn't happen,
yep,
does the game change? Mm-hmm. And do they get the full 2 points?
And more on that in a second. First, shout out and thank you to everybody at Park and BC Kitchen. We did a live pregame show there Wednesday, our first of the sort, from 6 to 7 p.m. at BC Kitchen, where you get 15% off the game day menu with your game day ticket. You're just steps away from Rogers Arena. A lot of thank yous. And we'll shout them out here. Everybody at Park, Derek, Stephen, Albert, Katrina, Puria, Wayne, and the fantastic staff there. And then shout out to all the listeners who came up and said hello. Damien, Mario, Jason, Mitch, Ryan, Mike, Scott, and
congrats
others.
Congrats to the winner.
We really enjoyed it, yes.
We gave away a big...
We gave away some prizes, yeah, including a Canucks jersey. So good time had by all. Thanks to everybody who participated, including all of you watched on Twitter, YouTube, and our social media.
Not the last time we'll do that either.
No, I voted yes on the poll question. Now, look, you're probably not going to see the Colorado Avalanche till the third round, and that's assuming both teams get there. So the head-to-head directly against Colorado is not my specific concern with regards to the Canucks in the playoffs. But I do believe that there are other teams in the West that can get to the level that we've seen out of Colorado in these three head-to-head matchups with the Vancouver Canucks. Edmonton is certainly a different team now than what Vancouver beat and beat handily earlier in the season. You've got Dallas, you've got Winnipeg. I still would put the Vegas Golden Knights on that list. But I'm most concerned here about Elias Pettersson. As one smart Twitter commentator noted yesterday, and we'll put it up on the video side, dominated in the possession game at 5-on-5, 14% shot attempts.
Who's this schmuck? Get
yeah,
him off
exactly.
The screen.
I blocked him.
I would too.
Worst amongst the forwards. He fumbled the puck, didn't move his feet, more than fumbling the puck, played sloppy in the third. Here's the other thing. Elias Pettersson versus the best teams in the West this year, he's got one assist in seven games against Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas. If you want to throw the Winnipeg Jets in there, he's got 3 points in nine games. He, like every other Canuck, fattened up on the Oilers when they were blowing them out early in the season. I'm not necessarily sure that would be the case now. But when the opponent has stepped up, and the game has stepped up, sadly, Elias has not stepped up.
I want everybody to exhale when they hear these sorts of things. This is not a condemnation of the player for their entirety of their careers. This is not saying that there's any regret about the contract necessarily. But when you look around the league and you see the Boston Bruins down in a game late or even tied looking for a win, David Pastrnak has a way of making himself look noticeable, taking over games and saying, nope, we're coming back. 97 in Edmonton. When they're down in a game in the third period, boy, does he become noticeable. Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen last night, same sort of thing. You want those players that you've devoted that much of your salary cap to be able to say, I got this. It's on my back.
Yep.
I'm going to be noticeable.
And Coach Tocchet addressed just that in the post game Wednesday. Here's Rick on the Avalanche Stars.
I mean, we need people to grab a hold of it. You know, like their guys took over, you know, McKinnon said, I'm taking this game. We need somebody to, a couple of guys to counteract that. And I thought we didn't, you know, Casey Smith battled really hard tonight for us. That was a positive.
And I think that was a group blame. He made it a group blame, but I think it was probably more looking at Elias Pettersson.
JT Miller was good last night, including after taking a dirty hit. More on that in a second. Here's the other thing, Blake. JT now has an 8-point lead on Petey.
Well, it's going away.
He's got more goals. He's got more assists.
JT Miller's had an unbelievable season.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this, folks, I'm not lambasting Pettersson here, but we said this at the 20-game mark, at the 30-game mark. Man, Pettersson's sure got a lot of points considering we don't feel like he's dominating. Remember that in November, Matt? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He had all those points. We're like, hey, great that you got all those points, but it's funny, he doesn't feel like you've got all those
and
points.
And he's had dominating games.
Yeah. That road trip in January was great.
One of our listeners, CW on Twitter, championship teams generally have one of a game-breaking dominant player, a la MacKinnon, or an elite shutdown defender, a la Patrice Bergeron. At this stage, EP40 is neither. And he's got it in him to be both those guys.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Is there equitable wingers on JT's line and on Elias Pettersson's line?
That is the one crutch that I think you can defend Elias on.
Yep,
for sure.
And I like Höglander a lot, but a certified NHL winger, Brock Besser's more certified than
Höglander. They're clearly missing a winger.
Yeah.
And Rutherford and Alvin knew this, and they tried to add someone by the deadline.
They were
unsuccessful.
Which is why, Matt, I am for the playoffs. I am for a reset to the lineup that they had prior to Lindholm, but just add Lindholm to Pettersson's line. You know, reunite the third line as we knew it. Keep the first line as it is.
Yep.
And go Lindholm, Pettersson, and Höglander.
And Lindholm can take all the draws. And then flip over and play the wing.
Yeah.
We saw that with Petey and Miller a lot of line in earlier incarnations. I know they like the three centers right now, but I'm absolutely with you because the other offshoot there is it gets that fantastic third line together.
Like in the regular season, sure. But come the playoffs, Matt, we know the fourth lines barely get used.
Right.
So don't strand a couple of your decent wingers on a fourth line. Compress everybody into the top nine.
Mm-hmm.
And then run out a fourth line just to kill 30 seconds every now and then. That's prudent.
Let's get to our top story. Avalanched. The Canucks have a 3-0 lead in this hockey game. They score twice in the opening 3 minutes. Until 2 seconds and change left in the second period. Mikko Rantanen scores at the death. Colorado gets two early ones in the third period. And then Carson Soucy flips the puck over the glass in the dying seconds of the hockey game. Power play in overtime. Valeri Nichushkin scores on the 4-on-3 off Noah Juulsen's visor. Canucks lose. They fall to 31-1-4 when leading after two periods. 19-10-4 against the playoff field. They're still 3 points ahead of Colorado and Dallas in the Western Conference. Oilers 9 back in the division with 3 games in hand. Let's hear from JT Miller on the 3-1 goal that gets Colorado back into this game.
Well, I mean, that goal definitely gave them belief. I mean, that's all that team really needed. I mean, it happens though. We should be able to come out in the third and with 2-goal lead at home against one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I don't understand any better reason to get up for that. I mean, it just sucks. This has happened before, and just kind of hope it works out when we have leads instead of take control of the game. And like, we have been good, you know, with the lead, but getting to that point of the year where it's, you know, just hard to swallow, really.
Couple of things that concern you within that. Number one, Colorado had played the previous night against Calgary, and I know that Nathan MacKinnon and some of their stars had their ice time cut back because the game was such a blowout and were fresher, but, you know, the team on the second of back-to-back should be the more fatigued team as the hockey game goes along, and Colorado, as the game went along, took more and more control of the proceedings. Also, here's from J-Pat again, 31-1-4 when leading after two. But as Jeff points out, they've now let 3 3-goal leads and a pair of 2-goal leads evaporate in the last 22 games. They had a 3-0 lead against the Leafs here. Toronto came all the way back, still won the game, escaped that night. They had a 3-1 lead in Detroit, lost 4-3 in overtime. They had a 5-2 lead in Minnesota.
How did that end?
10-7, Vikings right. over Lions, you right. may remember.
Yes.
They had a 2-0 lead versus Pittsburgh. They lost that hockey game 4-3 in overtime. Boy, 4-3 in overtime is the theme here.
Yeah.
Same as Wednesday against Colorado. So the focusing for 60 minutes, the protecting the lead, or if, as you say, not being aggressive enough with the lead, has been a bit of an issue in the last quarter of the season here.
And for anybody that thinks that you're reaching to, you know, have a concern, listen again to what JT Miller said.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and Rick Tocchet.
Like, JT Miller knows that they've held, he even couched it. Yeah, I know we've held a lot of leads, but he knows in his stomach something doesn't feel right lately. Like that to me is what we're hearing there with JT Miller. Yeah, over the course of the season, that leading after two periods stat is impressive. But he knows. You can hear it there. He knows something doesn't feel right about the way they performed with the big leads.
But also, Blake, what you did in October and November doesn't matter squat in April.
No.
We have seen incredible teams, historic teams, the Boston Bruins last year, the Tampa Bay Lightning a few years ago, go into the playoffs and lose in round one. One of the great things about the NHL is that this is still a sport where you see eight seeds beat one seeds with regularity and nobody bats an eyelash.
Now, this guy's not falling for me by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Let's be clear. Because they just came off a three-game road trip. They swept against three good teams.
And were suffocating defensively.
Yeah, so you don't have to reach that far back to find evidence of competency here.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's the only concern I've got coming out of this for the Canucks is their ability against the very best in the league to hold a lead.
Yeah. My concern would be form against this group of Western heavyweights, and particularly Elias being as quiet as he has been against these Western heavyweights. They got one more game against Edmonton, and I will be most interested to see how Pettersson plays in that one, because as we know, Edmonton is a much different animal than what they were in October and November when the Canucks were blowing their doors off because they didn't have goaltending and couldn't defend. That is a changed hockey club. Would they win 17 in a row, whatever it was, 18 in a row? So, yeah, one more chance against Edmonton. Still got Winnipeg, Vegas still on the schedule, so there are more of these tests remaining, and you want to see the Canucks do a little bit better. Alas, it's going to be a season series with not a single victory against the Colorado Avalanche. My other concern is what the hell is going on with NHL officiating and player discipline. I'm astounded on two levels. Number one, that Josh Manson hit on JT Miller could only be a two-minute penalty. But number two, that George Parros and the Department of Player Safety isn't reviewing that hit. This is not your typical, game moves fast, didn't mean to, blink of an eye, hit him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Manson has time. Miller is engaged. Manson is the third guy in. He's got time to assess the situation. And what does he do? He targets the head and he goes deliberately through the head and knocking Miller's head into the glass. To me, there's intent to injure there. It's targeted. It's deliberate. It's avoidable. It checks every freaking box in terms of a 5-minute match penalty and further discipline from the Department of Player Safety.
He finished the game. He did media afterwards. Both are good signs. As we are live on YouTube right now and Twitter, no practice yet. So can't speak to his availability there. But it is amazing that he was able to get back at it. And in some sense, it's good for the Canucks that it happened as late in the period as it did, and that his concussion protocol didn't really impact his shifts too much. So,
they
got the most out of JT Miller last night at the very least.
You know, the thing that I'd be worried about is JT's such a warrior and doesn't want to give an inch to an opponent that he would have just talked his way back into the game. Here, I'll give Manson one bit of credit. You can see him. And again, this goes back to how much time he's got. He does tuck the elbow. You can see him definitively tuck the elbow, which is the way it's supposed to happen. The problem is the way he contorts himself. And again, he's got time. He contorts himself to ensure that shoulder goes through Miller's head and into the glass.
Well, it's the biggest thing is just it's against the glass. It's a head against the glass. It's super dangerous. So
and is the head not the principal point of contact there? He gets more head than body, does he not?
Well, even if it is, and even if you don't want to call it for 5 minutes for hit to the head, it can be a 5 minute boarding penalty, regardless of where it's hit.
Right.
So it doesn't need to be the hit to the head.
And you have a mechanism where you can call it a major penalty and then review it. And that wasn't followed either.
Yeah. And that changes the game, too. Yeah. If it's a 5 minute power play.
Nice of the one referee to be so polite with Quinn Hughes. Go to the box, please. But I'd rather you get that call right, because that's a game-changing call. And I know some Canucks fans are screaming bloody murder about the officiating, about the soft call on Nathan MacKinnon, and MacKinnon duping the officials. Yeah. You know, and this show will very rarely say officiating decided the game. But a big miss like that does have an effect on the game. I don't know that Canucks win it from there. What I do know is Josh Manson should not have been participating from the moment that shoulder hits Miller's head.
Well, it certainly changes the momentum. It ensures that Colorado stays underfoot. I mean, they're killing a five-minute major penalty at that point. So I think it does change the game materially. The other stuff, the bad calls, the soft calls, that's just sport. I mean, it happens every day in every sport. Some days you come out a little ahead on that one. Some days you come out a little bit behind. So I'm not going to...
And they probably feel like they missed a penalty, which is why they called the soft one on MacKinnon, right?
Right. So
Because makeup calls are a thing.
Again, that's called the National Hockey League game, so I refuse to get too caught up in that. The times I bring up official stuff is a call like that, the one that's dangerous too, and then missed calls on you know, disallowed goals and that sort of thing. Like those are huge calls in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So when refs get like goal calls wrong and stuff, you'll hear us talk about that. But ticky-tack soft penalties, I mean, honestly, that's just called the National Hockey League.
Sad as that is.
But it's every sport. Talk to NBA superstars about driving to the rim and getting calls. It's every sport.
This sport, to me, has a bigger culture of makeup calls. This sport, to me, has a bigger culture of officials carrying things over.
Matt, how many times do you see pass interference in the final 2 minutes of an NFL game?
Almost never.
Right.
Yep.
So, they swallow whistles.
I shouldn't say never, but...
Yeah, rarely.
Canucks gave the Avs 4 power plays on the night. They go 2-for-4.
Yep.
Canucks 0-for-3.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's just a
delay
normal
a game penalty
night.
Is inexcusable. No,
and that's black and white.
You're giving these guys the high-octane firepower that they have. Like, you're asking for it. Mm-hmm. And look at the shot totals in the third.
Yep. And they had done so well in avoiding those sorts of penalties lately.
Yeah.
And Talkin was talking about his puck on stick, his
drills.
Stick on puck drill.
Yeah.
And how
there can be a lot
he
of
he's
going to
make it a part of every practice going forward. They are practicing today. He did say they're going to practice tomorrow. So a little bit of a, yeah, guys, you didn't earn a day off.
And they couldn't get pucks out on the PK. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't, you know, make a 5-foot pass in their own zone. And Colorado just came in waves.
And Susie traditionally has been a struggle zone exit guy. So
tell me I'm wrong, but on that play, on the puck over glass play, the diagonal coming off of the like, I'm telling you, like, he missed that by so little. Like, it was the worst. Again, puck luck. You've got puck luck some nights. You don't. Some like that is. That was so close.
So after the Manson hit, Nikita Zadorov, he's going to be the honor fight guy by the looks of it, Blake.
Which is bad, because this is the problem with having your bruiser as a defenseman. Like, it screws up your rotation.
So it's a problem. It's a big problem when he has to go honor fight forwards, particularly as a penalty
killer.
That's
not fair.
This one was defenseman on defenseman. I mean, from a size and mean standpoint, I get it. Wasn't much of a fight.
No. He's not much of a fighter. Going back,
But he winds up getting a Gordie Howe hat trick.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a quiet Gordie Howe hat trick by any stretch. Goal and assist as well. But 15% Corsi 4 on ice for 2 of the 4 Avalanche goals.
That's
for Nikita
the bigger
Zadorov.
Question, yeah.
Poor Juleson's on the ice for all 4 goals. And, of course, if Zadorov's going to kill penalties, then taking fights can be a compounded problem.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we got a goal from Ilya Mikheyev for the first time in 35 games.
Yeah, that kind of night in the NHL. Mm-hmm. A couple other droughts were broken.
More on that in hashtags.
He had been getting chances like that, and if you look at that, it's slow mo. It's not a clean tip. Like, I think he healed it, and it went in, and he's not going to argue, nor should anybody else.
Oh no! What I was talking about, yeah. The puck can hit him in the chest and go in, yeah. Like. Just one, any kind.
But tell me I'm wrong. The first couple of shifts after he got that goal, he was pretty good.
Well, he's had flashes here.
Like there was a weight alleviated by mm-hmm. scoring that goal.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let's hope it continues. And that,
you hope, bodes well.
Yeah.
Because if Ilya Mikheyev can get back in there, and I don't even need him to be a top six winger. If he can just be a competent middle six winger. And that's an improvement on where he has been for more than a quarter, nearly half.
I'd love for him to finish with 15 goals. Can he get 4 goals in the next 15 games? Like,
boy, a big ask given where we're coming from. But hit 10 and 28,
right,
to open the season.
Right. So that's
really damn good. That's a 30 goal pace.
I'm asking for less of that. Less of that pace. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be nice to see for the Canucks. It would give some confidence to the coaching staff going into. Mm-hmm. The postseason, that Ilya Mikheyev is worthy of the minutes in the playoffs.
And if he's staying with Miller, he's going to find him all day.
You would
soft
have
spots.
To think, yes.
And doing what he did for that goal is great. Zipping through the slot near the goal, because you know Miller's got that great passing ability. He's going to find that stick tape. So
made every minor hockey coach proud. Go to the net with your stick on the ice.
Yes.
Somebody will find
him. And Miller will find him, for sure.
Talk was talking about the guys, poor Casey DeSmith, because he plays really well in the early part of this game.
Yeah.
And yet it winds up being a loss, and the numbers don't look so good. And talking this week about how the guys really like Casey DeSmith and are more apt to block shots for goaltenders that are popular in the room. See the block shot count? 22 yeah. for the Canucks. Yeah. 2 for the Avalanche. Maybe they don't like Georgiev all that much. Or maybe just Colorado is getting the lion's share of shot attempts.
What's the old quote
as
about
the game went on?
Blocking shots is like killing rats. Good in the moment, but it illustrates a bigger
yeah.
problem.
Well, worse is
oh, that's
hits.
Really good. I've never heard that before.
You haven't?
No.
I didn't get it right, but
well,
it's
you got, sounded close
in the neighborhood
to right.
of.
But hits are like that, too. You know, people love to laud yeah. all the Canucks or any team. Team X out-hit the other team. If you're out-hitting the team, chances are you're chasing the other
yeah.
team.
Well, and
you
look
don't
at
have the
possession.
The
yeah. Exactly. Look at the possession stats. They got throttled yeah. at 5-on-5.
Garland was pretty good, though. A couple of great shifts there and set up on the Zadorov goal. Continue to feel pretty good about Connor Garland's game. And I like the fact that it's no longer with the Bluger-Joshua trio that had been so effective.
Can you believe we went as long as we did in his Canucks tenure going, what does he do? The last 50 games, like even mm-hmm. the start of this season, I think we still asked that question at the very start of this season.
Well, he was playing better at the start of the season, just the results weren't there. Yeah. That was the criticism.
But that's what we were saying. We're like, it's great that you can see him moving out there, but you need bottom line. Now the bottom line is there. The effort is yeah. always there, and the detail away from the puck, and like he's a marvelous player.
To answer your question, I can believe it just because he is an unorthodox player, and I think he's a awkward fit with line mates, and I think line mates sort of have to figure him out a little bit.
I'll never forget when they acquired him, and it was a controversial trade, obviously, and a series of trades with the Coyotes, but. When they acquired him, I remember Dave Tomlinson saying, I like him. Motor's always running. No, I like the player. And then again, it just sort of failure to launch with the Canucks didn't happen. Well, I think this is the player Tomlinson was talking about.
I remember Ferraro told us he thought that Garland would become a fan favorite at Rogers Arena because of the way he played and because yeah. he's a smaller, you know, everyman.
Yeah. Well, it's finally happened. It's finally happened.
See, Benning knew.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Took a while to manifest itself.
Thank you, Jim.
That's why they gave him the big contract.
Yeah, how about you just keep it to a thank you, Jim, Matt? Come on.
Thank you, Jim.
Honestly.
And that contract before he even played a game as a Canuck. Stroke of genius.
Brandon Sutter got that, too.
Foundational player.
James, by the way. Love you.
Who?
James
Cebulski. Thank you.
Oh, right, of course.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
I don't think he appreciates the, the mimicking, Grady. It's not polite.
Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, is coming over from Sweden, and he's heading to Abbotsford.
Yep.
And he has taken a nice step this year in prospect profile. He once again played on the Swedish junior national team. And the Vancouver Canucks may well have a real one there in a one-time third-round pick, Elias Pettersson, the defenseman. Can't play in the playoffs this year for the Canucks because was not on prior to the trade deadline. But should get some run with Abbotsford, I suspect.
14 games remaining for Abbotsford. I would assume they want him integrated into the systems a little bit more. So I doubt he plays this weekend, Saturday, Sunday versus Henderson. But the week after that, they've got a full week of practice after that. They'll play again between the 17th and the 23rd. So on the road versus the Manitoba Moose, maybe that's the spot to get EPD.
And may take some time. In fact, probably will take some time. It is quite a big adjustment for the European defenseman.
But he might look better now than he does at the start of next season, Matt, because he's in midseason form now, right?
Yeah, the North American ice is a different kettle of fish, and particularly the North American forecheck is a thing that you don't necessarily see in European hockey, at least not with the same ferocity, not with the same physicality that you will in the National Hockey League. So I don't think there's any world where Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, is making a huge immediate impact on the Vancouver Canucks, but great to get him on over here and begin that process of learning the North American style game. And yes, Grady?
Oh, I was going to say, a former radio host that shall not be named finally gets his wish that Elias Pettersson is in the AHL. You guys remember that banger of a tweet?
Oh, yes. Yes. I do remember that, yeah. Boy, you're keeping receipts here. Guys aren't even in the industry anymore. You're just mean, Grady. Honestly, move on.
Canucks piss me off. I'm sorry.
Clearly.
You piss me off.
Why? No reason?
We'll talk about it later.
Off air.
A lot of feistiness in the live chat on YouTube, by the way.
Yeah.
What are people upset about?
Some people are absolutely upset with the reffing. Others are saying, get over it. They didn't play well.
But look here.
You've got a right to be upset with the officiating. But it's just when you take it to the officials decided the outcome of the game. That's a position that you're going to have.
It's not a singular variable outcome here. There's a bunch of things that all add up.
Right.
You can't isolate. This is the problem with, and we see it on Twitter all the time. See, people get caught up on picking sides. It's either or when multiple things can be true at once. Like, we shouldn't have to spell this out for people every single time, but here we are.
Grady is revved up. My goodness.
Mm-hmm. I may have lost some money on the Canucks last night.
I see.
Did you enjoy yourself at Park?
I sure did.
Good.
Enjoyed those chicken wings. Shout out Piero. Buying the boys wings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And he gave me the fist pump with his big bling bling ring on.
A lot of
moly.
A lot of bling with Piero. Yeah.
Looks like he won the Super Bowl.
For him participating.
Fingers bruised from that.
In the show as well. Okay. We have to talk about this story. And Blake now has a conspiracy theory around it. The Pittsburgh Penguins announce that a shipment carrying the Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads has been stolen en route to Pittsburgh.
They needed it tonight. Uh-huh. Tonight was bobblehead night for Jaromir Jagr.
As a result, I read from their tweet, the bobbleheads will not be distributed at tonight's game, but will be distributed at a later date. All fans in attendance will receive a voucher that includes a one-time scannable barcode that will be required to pick up the bobblehead. Location and dates for pickup will be shared when the items are safely located or new bobbleheads are produced and available for distribution. What do you do with 18,000 black market Jagr bobbleheads?
Ransom, I guess. Do you hold them up for ransom?
Like, you can't put that on Marketplace, can you?
I would think not. You're going to get caught. I mean, they're going to get caught anyway. The long arm of the law will always catch up to you.
But these poor thieves, if one can stomach that sentence, you steal a truck cargo and it's a hockey player bobblehead.
Yeah, they might have had higher hopes.
Not exactly the Lufthansa heist there.
No, no. Anything else, really. Any other commodity. Q-tips.
Can you imagine? What do we have here? We've got this long-haired hockey player bobblehead.
Super unique.
What's his name? Well, his name's Jagger.
So the Penguins are leaning into this.
Yes, here's the conspiracy theory.
They were above board a long time ago, said Jaromir Jagr is going to be on hand for this bobblehead night. He's had quite the season there in Pittsburgh in his commemoration. So, it is conceivable. They just thought, hey, how do we make lemonade out of this? Let's do a video. So they've just released a video of Jaromir Jagr buckling in, I guess, one of their samples that they had of this bobblehead into the passenger seat of a Pittsburgh Penguins pickup truck. And he nestles in behind the wheel and says, let's go find your friends. And they drive out of the garage. So, hey, they might have just pivoted, and good on them if they've pivoted.
It's a great pivot. If they pivoted, like, well done to the marketing department. Yeah. That is fun stuff.
Or they've just strung along a narrative the whole way here.
Right. And surprise, there's going to be 18,000 bobbleheads.
And a
today.
Redemption story here.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But it was, either way, good on you, Pittsburgh Penguins. Well done.
Oh, that's fun. Good on them. All right. Let's get, just before we get to today's menu, our boy Adam Hadwin from Abbotsford flinging clubs into the water at TPC Sawgrass.
He's not doing as well as his compadre Nick Taylor.
Let's get to today's menu. It's brought to you by Ben Moss Jewelers. Ben Moss Jewelers, proudly Canadian-owned, operated, history dating back more than 100 years. Five locations in BC, including Willowbrook and Langley and Coquitlam Centre. Committed to customer satisfaction, check out the large selection of Canadian mine diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, mine diamonds, available with payment plan to suit your needs. For more info, check out benmoss.com. Ben Moss, shine bright. Like Price does on a daily basis.
Like Piero's bling.
Like Piero's bling.
Like the Canucks want to every night.
Tony Gallagher is on the show today. The Hall of Famer. X of the Province, 1040, and many other radio stations.
Do yourself a favor. Log the vocabulary, folks.
The vocabulary remains.
Chef's kiss.
Oh.
The G-man.
Nobody turns a phrase like Tony. Still has it. I called him Tuesday. Caught up with him and Susan. Found out how they were doing. I said, Tone, we want you back on the show. Was delighted to join. Came on today with Susan's help. She has the more contemporaneous computer.
Yep.
And knocked it out of the park, as Tony often does.
Yeah, he is... when he speaks, you just want to listen.
You just want to listen.
And he's, given the Canucks haven't been to the playoffs, well, in fact, they haven't hosted since he retired.
Right.
We should hire him as a playoff consultant.
We really should.
How do we cover the playoffs? We have forgotten.
Right. We full disclosure, we'd recorded it with Tony earlier. He came this close to a hologram. I thought he was going to say hologram for a second.
He says something else.
Yeah.
My favorite word. Vapor.
Vapor.
Just
evaporate.
Look for it. Like vapor. That's the simile used.
It's like an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Evaporated. Just when I'm talking to Tony on the phone, I will typically go find Carmen in the house and I'll put him on speaker just so that she can hear a few bars of what he's saying, and she just lights up. It's hard not to. We'll get to some hashtags. The best and worst of Twitter.com, including today, well, you mentioned gold droughts being broken. Also in my view, a bit of an odd assignment for Peyton Manning. J-Pat's going to join after a game like that. Wow. Everything is happening. So much happening in that hockey game.
Everything is
happening.
Well,
the other thing is, and I know it's a Canucks loss, but that building again last night, Rogers Arena has so very, very rarely roared over the last decade. Now, when at the games I've been to this year and watching games on television, it's got that buzz, that energy back that I remember from, you know, 08 through 2012 when they were
expectation.
Excellent team.
It's yeah. Expectation.
Seats are full. People yeah. are into the game. These aren't tickets that have been given away to people. These are dyed-in-the-wool hockey fans that are there living and dying on every bounce.
Proper reactions
exactly.
to the play.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, for a number of years there, you felt like it was almost – it almost felt like, you know, amongst the season ticket members, it was almost like a chore to go to Canucks games.
Yeah.
They were indifferent, dispassionate. Now you can – the building's really revving again. So Jeff takes us inside and tells us how he saw the game. Tony Gallagher coming up next. Happy Hour brought to you by Yellow Dog Brewing, Neighborhood Brewing, Foolish Winery, Yellow Dog Spirits. And on Thursday, March 14th, Neighborhood will be dropping one of their most popular beers, Sunshine City Passion Fruit Wheat Ale. This is absolutely a perfect summertime beverage. Drink a lot of them. It's a gold medal winning brew too. Silky smooth base, tart and exotic characteristics of passion fruit. It's a perfect accompaniment to sunshine, beaches, and good times. End of a busy workday, treat yourself to a Yellow Dog Neighborhood or Foolish Wine. Well, it was a couple of weeks ago, Blake, and Grady says to me, you know who we haven't talked to in a while that we need to talk to? I said, who's that? He said, the Hall of Famer.
This guy.
Tony Gallagher.
Oh, you got it.
Who joins us now from his abode in Kitsilano. Tony, how you doing?
I'm well, and we're all well here, and it's great to be with you guys again. It really is an honor to do so, and I'm so glad you guys are finally meeting with some genuine success in your endeavors, and I just wish you all the best of luck, because the environment has changed so radically and so objectionably in many ways, and the fact that you guys have landed on your feet is absolutely heartwarming. So
very kind of you, Tony, and you're quite right. Blake and I started doing this show in November 2011, so, you know, shortly thereafter.
Made a habit of talking to this guy.
Had Tony on for years. Had a little bit of residual success there. They won the President's Trophy in our first year, and then the dark days started, Tone. And, you know, I don't need to tell you about long stretches of Canucks teams being not very competitive, and yet,
actually was doing the beat actually, and they were 15 years under 500, 15 consecutive years under 500. But many of those years were actually fairly competitive, and they made the playoffs, because in those days they didn't have all these high point totals, so you could be under 500 and still make the playoffs. And they did that about 7 or 8 years, but usually it was one round and goodbye. And I think the 82 year was one of the years they were under 500, but they were, I think they finished with 78 points and got to the final. And so that went on. That sort of thing could happen. So you could still have an exciting year and be under 500. So, but it was a long stretch of pretty inept. I mean, some of the years were really bad as well. So
you got some good ones, though, and you did cover you covered the 15 one, right? The last time the Canucks hosted home playoff games, you were still covering the team at that point?
Yeah, I was. I retired in just shortly after that. And, obviously the playoff year when they were in Edmonton all holed up and 20 teams made the playoffs, I really don't count that. I mean, I don't count them as a strike against them or for them. But,
right,
You know, it was kind of a weird year. And then they went on that little run, and I think everyone was excited about it, but it was strictly a TV event. And no one found out whether, you know, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson could really could stand up to targeting in a playoff environment, because there was really no hitting in that. I mean, there were 7 and 8 penalties a night. It was like preseason hockey, because it was in a studio, no fans, quiet. And so the officials kind of called it like it was a preseason game. And there was a tremendous amount of power plays, which really helped the Canucks go on that mini run. But so this will be a really good look at this team. And I think we're all looking forward to it, because really what they've done has been nothing short of amazing. When you go from missing the playoffs by 12 points, or I guess you could say 13 legalistically, but missing by 12 points to essentially first overall, that's pretty astounding.
What are you made of the season? What's stood out to your eye this year, Tony, as you've watched the Canucks?
Well, first of all, the success in which they had in essentially evacuating 2/3 of their roster, bringing in a second 2/3, and having it all work out so wonderfully, stunningly well, is part luck, part genius, I think. The way the pieces have fit together. I mean, Roenick is a classic example. Granted, it's easy to play with Quinn Hughes, but he's putting in 24 minutes. And for a guy that was kissed off by a team playing essentially 23, 24 minutes a night and playing as well as he had, plus contributing 45 points to the total. I mean, things like that don't really happen, and they're happening here with alarming regularity.
And the role players too, as you talked about with that, like the Dakota Joshua stuff.
How do you let Dakota Joshua go? How do you look at that body, look what he can do, and let him escape from your clutches? I don't understand that. I mean, you work with a guy for 10 years to bring it out. If it takes 10 years, you're still a winner. I don't know. That's lost on me.
And then veterans like Teddy Bluger, too. Everybody thought they knew what Teddy Bluger was, and here he is sort of rejuvenating himself again. So you're right. I mean, it is part luck, because I don't think you expect the royal flush there when you sign a bunch of free agents like that. And literally every single one of them has hit for the most part. So you can't expect that every year, can you? And that's why now people are already looking past. We still got a playoff season to go here, Tony, but there's already news now about trying to sign these guys that were all astutely signed to one-year deals. We praised it at the time, Tony, because of the overcommitment of the prior management group, and now you're kind of wishing they had committed at least 2 years to some of these role players.
Well, this is it. I mean, you want to play it safe in one way, and then I mean, who expects a bonanza like this for everything to turn up roses the way it has? And I have to caution people right now, I do not follow the game as closely as I used to, and I want to make that proviso. I'll probably make some blunders here, but it just worked out so well, and now it's backfired, and they're going to have some issues, but the salary cap is expanding. They have the Pettersson deal done, albeit for high dollars, and they'll have to try and fit it in as best possible, and maybe they won't be able to hang on to everybody, but that's why it would be nice if they can really have some success this year.
Tony, 21 coaches and the head coaches in the history of the Vancouver Canucks, 2 Jack Adams Awards, Alain Vigneault in 06, 07, Pat Quinn in 91-92. You covered them both. But I ask you, sir, Rick Tocchet this year, is this the best coaching job you have seen from a Vancouver Canucks
boss? You have to give him a heaping helping of the hospitality, as it were, not to quote a jingle, but which I just did. But obviously they've had tremendous success, and they've done exactly what we just described, went from 12 points out of the playoffs to essentially number one. Where they finish, who doesn't matter now, who cares? They're home and cooled out. And so obviously it's been a phenomenal job putting the pieces together, getting them all on the same page, having everybody work as hard as they are every night. It's heartening to see. And I think he's got to win coach of the year. I can't imagine who wins it out over him, and he will have earned it. And that's terrific to see a guy come out of a TV studio onto the scene and know immediately what to do with a group of newly assembled players. It's nothing short of jaw-dropping.
How has the craft changed, though? Because you used to see rough-and-tumble players, and Pat Quinn was certainly amongst them. and become rough and tumble coaches. And here we have Rick Tocchet playing from the, you know, Broad Street Bullies, and he played a tough brand of hockey. But Tony, he doesn't seem to be the rough and tumble coach. He's figured out the right path, that narrow path of being accountable, but also making sure the players feel like he's on their side as well. It's been a masterclass in that regard.
Well, it has been. That's an excellent point, Blake. And you can often see Rick standing behind the bench, shaking his head, saying, I can't believe what the game's come to, but I accept it, you know, and we're going to play that way. Like, I mean, you see Elias Pettersson go to the front of the net, and he stands there, and he watches the puck go back and forth, and this guy, 170 pounds, is standing in front of the net. No one is touching him. They're just standing right beside him saying, hello, Elias, how are you doing? Are you looking for a rebound, maybe a deflection? Yes, well, feel free. Go right ahead, because they can't touch him. Could you imagine what Darian Hatcher and Richard Matvichuk would have done to Elias Pettersson in the old days? I mean, like, the game has changed so much that it's mind-boggling, and it has to be mind-boggling to talk it. But he's rolled with the punches. I mean, I'm sure he shakes his head every time he blows the whistle sometimes, but he's managed it, and it's worked out wonderfully well for them.
Thought we were getting close to a hologram there, Tony, with Elias in front of the net.
Well, I mean, have you noticed how comfortable he is there? I mean, Everybody goes there now. I mean, it takes no jam to go there. It's just dead simple.
Quinn Hughes. A word or two about Quinn Hughes, because I think we could, and I think this was obvious some time ago, that we're looking at the best defenseman in the history of this club.
Oh, without question, yeah. I think Jyrki Lume would be the first to say that, or many other candidates who may have been close to that. It's extraordinary to watch him, isn't it? He just skates away from whomever he wishes to skate away from at any time. Now, it will be interesting in the playoffs to watch some teams dump it in the corner, go after him and try and hit him. And they'll hope there's retribution taken and that it results in a power play. Obviously, Pettersson's going to be targeted as well. I mean, they're both not the biggest guys in the world, but when it comes to Hughes, how do you hit him? He vanishes like
that's it.
Vapor. He's just gone. Maybe teams will try it one game to see how we can do it. And if we can get a couple of hits on them, fair enough. If not, they'll abandon it, I'm sure. So, you know, Quinn needs to be very fresh and ready to go first two games of the series to get away from that. And if he's able to shake it, I think they'll evacuate the plan.
It's a good point, because if they miss, it's odd man rush the other way immediately, right? Because, you know, that guy's committed and he's on the end boards, and Quinn Hughes has left him in the dust. So you're right. It's going to, and he's more elusive than most, though, right?
Ridiculously so. Ridiculously.
Like, Elias Pettersson doesn't have that ability to, like,
no.
You know, he's not the skater that Quinn Hughes is. So I think you got a legit worry with Pettersson. I think there's a good chance that Hughes is able to withstand the playoff rigor.
Yeah, I really don't know what he weighs anymore either, because he appears to be much more sturdy than he ever was when he first came into the league and was first getting knocked around a fair bit. I mean, he likes to go after hits. He's got a bit of Peter Forsberg in him too, you know, so where he kind of looks for things, not with the puck the way Forsberg used to go after hits when he actually carried the puck. But you know, he's not afraid of the shy stuff. So can he stand up? I mean, and if they bang him, they'd like to kind of semi, not try to injure, but knock him off stride a bit and get him injured, get him out of a game or two. That would be the goal, just to bump him and get him off his game a little bit. But he's easier to hit. Yeah, no question about it. Hughes is about the most difficult target in hockey right now.
JT Miller. What do you make of JT Miller when you watch
him? Phenomenal season. I mean, just phenomenal. Everyone thought, well, this guy, you know, maybe it's a big gamble to sign him to the long-term deal. You know, he's maybe going to put his feet up after a couple of years. Well, maybe he will, but these first 2 years have been blistering, nothing short of amazing. And if he gives you one third the effort that he's been giving this year, then you'll be still very happy with him.
Tony, we all remember the exhilarating hockey played in the 1980s with all those goals and goals from distance. You know, guys like Fleur, Bossy getting one step inside of the blue line and unleashing in the top corner. But have you ever seen the actual game itself be better in terms of the way guys skate and the way guys handle the puck these days?
No, clearly. The new rules have allowed the more skilled guy to flourish, and the tougher player has been phased out. So you're getting just a dose ton more skill. And now, granted, the rules really permit so much more. They allow you to do and try way more than you used to. You have to have you can have your head down crossing the blue line a lot. You can do a lot of crazy things that you used not to be able to do. So I think that's added to the ability to exercise the skill that you have that some of the older players may have had as well, but just didn't have the environment whereby they could do it. So, but at times, while this has been an electric year for Canuck fans, let's face it, the game can be pretty boring sometimes too. You can get tired of skill. You can have long stretches of no shots, because they're either overpassing or worried that they can't possibly beat the goalie from where they are. So they try something, they lose the puck. It's a trade-off. I mean, there's no emotion allowed in the game. The officials, the moment the slightest emotion comes into a game, they clamp down on it. So, but skill, is very prominent, and it's great to watch.
Let's just hope the Canucks don't face the Kings in the first round, because
boy,
a boring first round playoff series.
That passive 1-3-1 that they play.
Well, they do sit in it, don't they?
Oh gosh, they've got discipline. I'll give them that.
And then their fans sit there and boo the visitors.
Yeah, well,
trying to move against it, like Quinn Hughes is holding the puck and he's getting. I assume he's getting booed and not the home fans. Maybe they are booing the home team.
Well,
I know they would be in Vancouver. I would assume that the booing is against the home team.
But the Canucks had the lead in that game, too.
And Tony, of all markets to play that, I mean, this is L.A. Showtime. People have some entertainment options.
It ain't Showtime. Sorry about that, time.
What do you think this city's going to look like? Do we remember how to do playoffs, Tony? It has been so long. What do you think this city's going to look like come playoff time?
Well, I don't know. Are we looking at Riot 2024?
Oh, gosh.
Please, no,
one
Tony.
Way or another? I mean,
please, no, Tony. Tell us not. The politicians and police have learned the lessons.
Well, get ready. That's a possibility.
Hey.
They haven't gotten that far yet. Let's get them out of the first round. Anything could happen. They have a very good team. They're very aggressive. I think they're suited to playoff hockey. They have a nice enough mix to stand up physically to other teams. And I guess it's how Mr. Demko fares against his opponent and, that a lot of those turnovers that appeared in the Canucks game last night don't reappear in crucial situations during the playoffs.
Demko's not going to be able to touch Luongo's wins record, is he, in a season? Because he's never going to play 76 times like Roberto did.
Well, let's hope not. I mean, although his load hasn't been crushing this year, I think he's well-suited to go into the playoffs, getting a bit of a respite now, and assuming he bounces back and gets into form, which can be questionable. It sometimes is hard to find your best immediately. But I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's had such a good year. He's very confident, and there's no reason he can't be outstanding in the playoffs.
Last question for you, Tone, because you're how many years in retirement now?
Almost 10.
Oh, 7 or 8. Yeah.
7 or 8.
Hit me off before the blunder is too big.
Hey, he tried to tell us that he's not paying attention, and then he gave us
litter perfect
20 minutes of absolutely paying attention. But 7, 8 years in retirement now. Canucks' first time back in the playoffs, the real playoffs for 9 years since 2015. Susan, your boys, their wives, grandchildren,
when they all come together to watch the playoffs. Tony Gallagher going to be rooting for the Canucks. You can have your jersey on, Tony, pulling for the home team. Because I know
I'd like to see it before I pass, you know, the blessed event. Whether I will or not, I don't know. It would be nice. And it's a nice bunch of guys, too. I mean, I don't know many of the players very well anymore, but the guys I do know are all terrific. I really miss Bo Horvat not being on this team and having what happened to him. I mean, I know he wanted to leave, and he made the call, and he made the wrong call. And I really liked Bo, but I mean, Elias and Mr. Miller and, you know, the guys I do know are all wonderful people. Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote are great, great guys. And I would just love to see them have some success. They've had success in their lives before, in their hockey lives before. And it's time for Vancouver. And maybe that's the theme this year from the NHL office. Make sure Vancouver wins the cup. So, because what's been happening has been astounding, truly miraculous. And why not let the miracle continue?
I mean, if you're writing scripts, though, shouldn't they want McDavid to hoist the chalice? I mean, they might, if they're writing narratives at all, wouldn't that be the narrative to write?
When is the last time that the commissioner, Mr. Bettman, wrote a small market Canadian team hosting the trophy, Blake?
Right.
No matter who's on the roster.
It's never happened before.
At least Vancouver's a sizable market team.
There you go. There you go.
So they have a sniff of a chance.
Mm-hmm. Tony, it's been wonderful catching up. Great to hear your voice. I know our listeners will tell us that. Great to see you here on the YouTube side of things. Appreciate this. Best to Susan, the kids, grandkids, and we'll catch up soon here.
Well, thank you both so much. And you're all entirely too kind to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. No matter what you're buying, folks, when you're out in the world looking for this, that, and the other, I think you want to support businesses that you feel good about supporting. You can feel good about supporting the Applewood Auto Group. They've made the car business and communities around them a whole lot better with their work in the community. Go and find out why it is indeed all good at Applewood. Visit them online anytime at applewood.ca.
Harrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Kia in Langley. Two electric vehicles to choose from, the EV6, the Niro EV, both the 2024 editions with financing down at 4.99% for up to 60 months right now. So skip the pumps, get into an EV now at Applewood Kia in Langley. It's all good at Applewood.
Tim Horton's poll question: does the Canucks record against Colorado give you concerns for the playoffs? Yes or no? You can vote at Sakarison Price on Twitter and YouTube. Speaking of Twitter, hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter.com. Blake Price, lead us off.
It's a quote tweet of this one first. At Bar Down, there are currently 17 players this season that are on pace to finish with more points than Jamie Benn's 2015 Art Ross winning total. Like, for 2015, yes, is...
That was perhaps the worst Art Ross season in the history of the league.
And you forget about it. You know, it actually is really disappointing when you think about it, because 2015 is well after they clamped down on the hook in the ground, all that sort of stuff. This season, so now Pierre LeBrun quote tweeting that average goals per game in the NHL this season through last night, 6.22. Mm-hmm. Now, last year was amazing, 6.36. That was the highest in 30 years. But this is pretty good. This is the third highest, basically, in the last decade. The last two seasons were just above this season's, but it's still pretty high.
It's a much better game now.
And it's almost a full goal better.
When was Ben's Art Ross?
14-15.
Yeah.
Like, not that long ago.
9 years ago.
And it's almost a goal.
That was the
added.
Willie Desjardins Canucks to the playoffs here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Blake, we've sat here and watched it and talked about it. The gameplay has gotten better. The speed of the game has never been better. Everybody can skate out there. Everybody can handle the puck, which in 2014, 2015, you still had these granite hand defensemen who could still off the glass and out. That was their only play. Now, I sit there and I watch defensemen handle the puck and some of the things they do to create zone exits. And it's astonishing compared to what we used to watch. Because even guys on the third pair can do that.
By the way, JT Miller with his points last night ties the Jamie Benn number of 87 points.
Does he really?
Yeah. So JT Miller has the 14-15 Art Ross in his back pocket. Pettersson and Hughes could pass that 87-point barrier, too, with a good finish. So it's likely that the Canucks could have three guys pass that 14-15 mark.
Did you see this last night in Edmonton at Gino Hard underscore? Connor Brown scores his first goal in 58 games.
At last.
And then Oilers fans were throwing hats on the ice for him. Now, the poor guy played just four games last year. He comes over to Edmonton.
Why did he come over to Edmonton, Matt?
Erie Otter alumni.
And plays 54 games without a goal.
Which is unbelievable considering he was sort of brought in to, we thought, to keep Connor McDavid happy or to placate Connor McDavid.
Mm.
And you know, you would have thought they would have given him some shifts with Connor to break the Schneider or something. You know, like,
hey, that is prime real estate there on the wing beside Connor McDavid. You remember that one offseason where they signed like eight wingers and they were all going to play with Connor McDavid?
It's true.
I was one part charmed, one part embarrassed for the poor guy. He had a good sense of humor about it. He was laughing, smiling. The bench erupted, of course. And then the fans taking cues with a long, loud ovation and hats being thrown on the ice. Here's what I love about it. You know it's a hockey market when something like that goes down, right? I'm not sure that happens in every Sunbelt market.
A two-time 20-goal scorer.
Yeah, no, he was a good player earlier in his career.
I mean, he only just turned 30. Mm-hmm. You would have thought he would have had more game than he's had this season for the Edmonton Oilers. South of there, at Salim Valji, Flames announced signing of prospect Hunter Brustevich.
Yeah.
Acquired in the Elias Lindholm trade to a three-year entry-level deal. No crashing news here. Of course they're going to sign him. They just traded for him. But it's just it's the moving on news.
Mm-hmm.
He has moved on.
Yeah.
It is going to be a
thing. It's real now.
It's real.
They may have to play against Hunter Brustevich, and let's hope he doesn't turn out like Rasmus Anderson.
Yes.
The last top four right-shot defenseman the Canucks gifted the Flames. Oh.
Were they going to draft Anderson, though?
I suppose they get credit for drafting him. Were the Canucks? God, no. That regime? No. I mean, he was meat and potatoes, but Swedish meat and potatoes. At Deadline Hollywood, Kelly Clarkson and Peyton Manning are joining the NBC Olympics team to host the opening ceremony of the games in the 33rd Olympiad in Paris this summer. Clarkson and Manning will join Mike Tirico in the coverage.
Doesn't surprise me.
Football, not an Olympic sport, although we have touch coming to Los Angeles. I guess what, and I suppose it's the difference between sitting there in the booth for what, a four-hour show or however long the opening and closing ceremonies go, as opposed to committing to 19 weekends and playoffs. But Peyton Manning, he doesn't want to be a football broadcaster in the traditional sense, but he wants to do the Olympics.
Yeah, I think he is just a personality. And, you know broadcasting,
it's
about personality.
I know all those things.
Like, I could be wrong.
It's odd to me that one of the most gifted communicators in the history of the sport, and one of the smartest guys in the history of the sport, not to mention, as you say, the guy with the huge personality, is not more formally involved in the broadcasting of the sport week to week. Because, like, I think Tony Romo's done a very good job. I know people are down on Romo now.
He's fine.
But I think he does a terrific. Greg Olsen is fantastic. Like, Tom Brady has very big shoes to fill if he's going to be the lead Fox analyst. And I think Brady will do a great job, too. And yet I take Peyton over all those guys. I was very disappointed the Manning cast wasn't on the part of the TSN 5 station platform this past year.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do it this year.
I hope they bring that back.
On the Olympics, don't they, like, hasn't Johnny Weir, the figure skater,
Johnny
done
Weir
summer games?
But hasn't Tara Lipinski have done a lot of Olympic work?
But I'm saying,
but they're Olympians.
No, I know, but I think they've done summer games even.
Well, yeah, but they're Olympians. It's very common to see the summer Olympians at the Winter Olympics, you know, with some sort of role, and vice versa. Weir and Lipinski, also some big personalities and good charisma there as well. Okay, let's get going.
At Dylan O. Hernandez, the Dodgers could open next season in Japan, and their trip could include an exhibition game against Shohei Ohtani's former team. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's part of the reason why you're doing this is the marketability of Shohei Ohtani.
Of course, and going to Korea to start this year. So.
Did the Mariners not go back to Japan as well? I think they might have with Ichiro in tow. I believe that is. I mean, again, that's just a.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And that's hashtags for today. Frank White, Jeff Patterson, our Canucks reporter, who joined us at Park last night for a pregame show and then headed on over, steps away to Rogers Arena to cover, well, a game unlike many this season, Jeff. First of all, your overall impressions on blowing a 3-goal lead and losing the Avalanche 4-3.
No, I'm kicking myself for not dropping that $5 bet on Mikheyev that we talked about on the pregame show.
Thank you.
Look,
I'm collecting.
I mean, sum it up, dream start, nightmare finish, right? I mean, 24 seconds in, you open the scoring, and 2 minutes later, you've got a 2-0 lead, and it felt like this is Winnipeg all over again, and that these guys mean business. And they extended their lead to 3-0, and everything was sunshine and roses, and then we know where it went from there. I mean, that goal with 2 seconds left in the second period, just an absolute crusher in hindsight, but this team has to be stronger. It's got to be stronger mentally. It's got to be stronger physically. It's got to be stronger on pucks, as Rick Tocchet said a couple of times at the podium in the aftermath. But a goal with 1.8 seconds remaining just sort of opened the door, because you figured back-to-back for the Avs, if they go to the third period down 3-0, they're not going to roll over, but maybe they think it's just not their night, and their willingness to battle for every loose puck probably recedes somewhat. But now it's a 3-1 game, and they're thinking, hey, we're a shot away from making it a 1-goal game, and sure enough, they get the power play goal early and then had all sorts of time to even it up, which they did. So, you know, I was on with you guys after the 10-7 loss in Minnesota, and I said, quite frankly, I thought that this Canuck team had progressed past the point where they were mentally fragile and that there had been enough learning lessons and some tests along the way. And I look back now, and by my math, this is the fifth time since the middle of January where the Canucks have squandered either a 3-goal or a 2-goal lead. Now, the game against Toronto when they were up 3-0 and then tied 3-all, they went on to win. But the other ones has cost them points in the standings. And so, you know, that is a little troubling, because 15 games to go, everything has to be looked at through a playoff prism now. Absolutely everything. And if this recent history is there for the Vancouver Canucks, other teams around the league are going to know it. Their first-round playoff opponent's going to know it, that, hey, if we lean on these guys, they maybe can't handle the heat as well as they ought to. So I do think that this is something that Rick Tocchet has to address, and ultimately the players have to figure out before game one round one.
Yeah, let's ask you the Tim Hortons poll question then, Jeff. Does their record against Colorado give you concerns for the playoffs?
Well, look, they just passed tests beating Los Angeles, Vegas, and Winnipeg in succession. And I think for the crowd that said, who have they beaten? They offered up three pretty good examples there. So they're not going to face Colorado in the first round. They may run into Colorado somewhere down the line. Look, if they run into Colorado in the third round, this season has been an overwhelming success. And you take your chances. They've played the Avs hard in all three games, but they didn't get it right. And so did they beat Colorado? No, they didn't. And playing them hard, you know, maybe that gives them something to build on if they do run into them in the postseason. But I don't think the fact that they haven't beat Colorado leaves me with reason for concern. I think it's more the leads that are getting away from them, the power play guys, that is a massive issue. And they got schooled in special teams last night. Colorado scores twice with a man advantage. The Canucks go 0-for. And it's funny, because Rick Tocchet at the podium after the morning skate on Wednesday had said, I don't care about our overall power play percentage. When the game is tied 3-3 with 6 minutes to go, that's the power play that matters. Well, guess what? It wasn't 6 minutes. It was 8 minutes to go. They get a power play in a 3-all game. Nils Höglander gets the bounce of his lifetime to the front of the net, and maybe in a little too deep, but stuffs it right into Alexander Georgiev. But even as that game was slipping away, there was a chance there with the man advantage to go back in front and pull a victory out of the fire. A power play that is now a shade over 15% in 18 games since the All-Star break. 8 goals in that time, but 2 of them have been 4-on-3 power play overtime goals. So conventional power plays, they have 6 goals in 18 games since the All-Star break with all of their stars healthy. And so this is where I come back to this playoff prism. If you're scoring a power play goal once every 3 games, 2 power play goals in a 6-game playoff series, guess what? You're not advancing. You're not. Like, your power play has to come through for you. It probably has to win you a game or two in the playoffs, especially with the talent that they can roll out there. So this is go time now. 15 games remaining. They have to get this power play figured out because it has to be better. And there were moments in that game against Colorado and other games where the power play could have risen to the challenge and won them a game, and it hasn't. And I do, you know, of all the things, when I think of the star power the Canucks possess, a power play that is 29th by league ranking since the All-Star break, ahead of Columbus, New Jersey, and Philadelphia, worst in the Western Conference, there's some red flags there for me.
And it looked terrible just on the judges' cards, too, the power play last night, like just not looking good at all. Hey, they were the second best team over the final 2 periods. There's no question about it. There's no debating that, I don't think. And yet, I honestly believe you don't have to go too many dimensions over to find a way in which the Canucks win this game maybe 3-2 in regulation time, because the closing goal there to end the second period, I mean, you're 1.8 seconds away from escaping with a 3-0 lead after 2 periods. And that Carson Soucy thing, I mean, that's an inch, right? That's an inch away, and you're at least going into overtime 50-50 with a chance to steal a point back as well. I mean, there's a bit of puck luck that also reared its head, in addition to playing poor over the final 40, but they might have been able to escape it with just a smidge of puck luck.
Well, and Harm and I talked on Rink Quiet. Like, you know, usually in a game, there is a turning point or two. I felt there were 5 turning points in that hockey game last night. When you go back to
hexagon.
Josh Manson's hit on JT Miller, like why that wasn't reviewed, assess a major in the moment and then review it. Like it was a clear check to the head. It wasn't a boarding call. It was a check to the head. That was the penalty. Give him 5 and then review it. And they didn't. They elected to give him a 2 and Miller wasn't available for the power play. So, you know, that was a swing in Colorado's favor early in the hockey game when it's already a 2-0 lead for the Canucks. And then we talk about the late second period goal. And then we talk about Ian Cole. Like, yes, there's a little bit of contact there, but come on, Nathan MacKinnon, the Oscars were on Sunday. Like, talk about a sell job and a star getting a call there. But we've seen the Canucks running into 5-on-3 problems in that game in Minnesota, among others. But then the Hoglander chance, and then, as you point out, Blake, Carson Soucy, and we've been talking him up, and he has been good in his return, and that is unfortunate. And look, like they needed an Elias Lindholm faceoff win with 10 seconds to go just to get that thing to overtime to get a, you know, to secure a single point. So once it was at 3-3, it was like, you got to get something out of this hockey game. And all points are good points at this stage of the season. Yes. You know, that's not the silver lining here, but it really is about amassing as many points as you can. And so they should have had 2, they get 1, and hopefully some lessons learned. But, you know, again, as Rick Tocchet said post-game, like, you just got to dig in. And his team didn't. They looked spooked. They got outshot 17-3 in that third period by a Colorado team where the Stars revved things up. And unfortunately for the Canucks, JT Miller was really the only star that was going for the hockey game last night. And it is fair, I think, to apply some heat to Elias Pettersson, who, you know, Miller takes on the MacKinnon matchup. The Canucks outscore the Avs 2-1 at even strength with MacKinnon. Like, they won the 5-on-5 battle with Nathan MacKinnon on the
That's
ice.
That's it, yeah.
And then
didn't look great, but they did ultimately win.
But Elias Pettersson draws Casey Mittelstadt in his line, like, absolute advantage to the Vancouver Canucks, you'd think. And Pettersson didn't get a shot on goal in his minutes against Casey Mittelstadt. So, not a banner night.
Are you concerned of Pettersson versus the better teams, Jeff, this year?
Yes, I am. I think that's a fair critique that, you know, he's dropped below the 100-point pace now. He can still get there if power play heats up. But remember the night in Pittsburgh when he scored the overtime winner, he outdueled Sid, and the Canucks were on that barnstorming tour of the East. He left that night in Pittsburgh on a 111-point pace. He's now on a 97-point pace. Like, there has been a significant drop in his production. I think we've all seen that for ourselves, but just to put some numbers to it, from 111 point pace, for all the people that have just kind of, you know, thrown out this idea of back-to-back 100 point seasons, he's got to get on his horse now over the final 15 games to be a 100 point guy this year. And you know, whether he finishes with 101 or 100 on the nose, or like JT a couple of years ago, 99, that's not really the issue. I mean, he's points wise, he's going to finish with a big number. But the question now is he going to be able to put up numbers in the playoffs against good opponents, the same opponent night after night after night, where you have to get 4 wins out of 7, where matchups are just pivotal and adjustments and all those types of things? Yeah, I've got some concerns because he has been remarkably quiet. I don't think he's taken over a game since the All-Star break. He may not have taken over a game since that Pittsburgh game that I referenced. And we're working our way closer. Again, 15 to go, everything through a playoff lens right now. I have some concerns about, is he going to be able to elevate and not just play hard, but ultimately you got to produce when the chips are down at playoff time. And he did it in the bubble, so there is a track record. I'm not going to say that he hasn't done it in the past, but yeah, he's got to find a way to leave way more of a stamp on more hockey games than he has over the last 20 or so.
There's lots to talk about in his game that we'd like to see just a little bit different. But to me, his puck control just seems off this year. Like it's amazing for us to even have a criticism of a guy who's on pace for 97 points. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right. But, you know, this is a $12 million player, $11.6 million player. You do expect a certain look to that player, and it just seems like the puck is not sitting for him when he, you know, rest in peace, Jason Botch, for bro, do your deeks. The deeks seem a little bit, I don't know, lack of control. And this, you know, he's had moments. I was at the goal against the Rangers in at MSG where he's below the goal line in Texas. Yep. I mean, there are moments you can point to. But like last night, he's sliding through the slot there with some momentum, and the puck's just kind of jumping on him, and he expected player of his ability to be able to calm that puck and get a shot away, and the play just fizzled and it quickly turned the other way. There was no attempt on goal even. So I don't know if it feels like it's between the years, is I guess what I'm saying here, Jeff. It feels like there's something going on for him that he just isn't himself necessarily.
Yeah, look, we've all seen his Petey magic. The entire market has seen his Petey magic, and for long stretches, and even this year. I mean, he got shut out of a cannon the first 20 games. What did he have? First 10 games. I think he had 21 points in the first 10 games. Like, he was on fire to start the season, and the team was. And as a result, look at the record then. And then that stretch in mid-January, and again, he was one of the leaders and absolute drivers of that successful road trip. But since then, and, you know, does it correspond to the noise picking up around his contract? But the hope was that the contract's put to bed. He's got his bag now. Even Rick Tocchet had said earlier in the week that he thought that, you know, he had talked to him and he felt that he was in a better mind space, and he scored a nice goal in Los Angeles there, and a big one to tie that game at 1 last week. And he got a goal against Winnipeg on the power play the other night. So, you know, there have been moments here and there, but it overall, he's not dominating games the way a guy like JT Miller has. And maybe, like, I'm not trying to pit him against Miller, but again, in this market, people understand. I mean, our audience follows this team. They know, like, JT, look, just look at the start last night. Like, that had a big game feel, and JT Miller was there from the opening faceoff and is in on the first two goals. And as I said, like, he's taken on McKinnon and holding his own in that matchup, and they needed something from the lower layers of that lineup. Like, that's where they think that they have advantages on other teams, and it just wasn't there. So, you can't use the contract and the noise, but guys, like, if he didn't like the noise around $7.5 million, you know, if it doesn't go well at playoff time for him and this team, the volume is going to get cranked up again for a guy that's going to be making close to $12 million for the next 8 seasons. So the contract story isn't put to bed yet. I mean, the contract is, it's signed, but absolutely something worth watching here over the final 15. And then once they hit the start line for the playoffs.
And hey, they've beaten 29 teams in the NHL this season. So they, you know, there's not many other teams that have been a kryptonite quite like the Colorado Avalanche have, but hey, guys, maybe we have a new dragon to slay for the Vancouver Canucks. You know, makes for a good call. Sure, he's got it in his back pocket if he needs it.
I think we need some playoff series there first. No, incidentally, no points against Colorado this year for Elias Pettersson. Shutout in the three games against the Avalanche. Do you get the sense that Canuck luck is rearing its head here, Jeff, with everything that's going on with the club? The Demko injury, I mean, Soucy over the glass, game-winning goal off a face mask, for heaven's sakes. Do you get a sense? We had gone through three quarters of the season like going, pinch me. I can't believe how great things are going for the Canucks. Everything is going right. And yet now we're seeing the worm turn a little.
I'm not sure I'm there with you. You know, they just came off a four-game win streak. They've picked up points in five straight. You know, did the worm turn in Minnesota? Like, that was the bizarre game to me that I thought was a bit of an outlier. Obviously, the similarity is that a 5-on-3 in the third period with Casey DeSmith in goal last night. But, yeah, look, yes, there were some bounces, certainly, but they've had their share of bounces as well along the way. You don't get to 92 points without getting a couple that go in your favor. So, it was a Colorado team that looked determined. I don't know how you explain the first 40 minutes. As good as the Canucks were, the Avs looked somewhat disinterested. Like, Nathan MacKinnon didn't ever rev it up and, you know, get on one of those patented rushes. The Canucks did a nice job in the neutral zone. Cale Makar, I thought, had a sleepy game for the most part. He and Quinn Hughes, as much as we talked that up, neither one of them was among the stars of the hockey game last night. So I give Colorado star power. Like, I think they recognize, MacKinnon knows that even over 20 minutes, he can still take a game over. You know, Rantanen just gets overshadowed by MacKinnon, and it's a little unfortunate because the guy is just an absolute beast. And again, his goal sparks the comeback. He has a 3-point night, just a handful, obviously. So, you know, a little unfortunate for the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah, but I don't know that the worm has turned. I don't think this is going to – I hope this isn't start a run for Carson Soucy where he's flipping pucks into row seven. I think that that was a one-off, and, you know, it'll be interesting. We've talked about load management. Noah Juulsen on the ice for all four goals last night. I think that probably opens the door for a healthy Tyler Myers to get back in on Saturday. And then, you know, we'll see where it goes from there. I would think that, you know, Myers will be a fixture, but Ian Cole might come out. Juulsen probably will see a few more games along the way, but it's going to be interesting to see. But I would think that when you're on the ice for all four and a 4-3 loss, the door is probably open to you coming out, making way for a veteran like Tyler Myers to get back in there on Saturday.
Last one for me. Physically, the Canucks started amazing. I think Pod Colton had five hits in the first period or something crazy like that. They looked okay physically to start, but does the addition of Dakota Joshua make a difference in that game? If he's available last night, do you think that with those big forwards bearing down the likes of Rantanen and MacKinnon, does Joshua make a significant difference in that game?
Like we've said about Soucy, he makes them better. You know, does he win them that hockey game? I don't know, but certainly, you know, like even look on the Ross Colton goal, like that's Garland's out there. Garland's trying his best to tie up Ross Colton, but he lost that battle and ultimately that puck gets in. You know, if it's Dakota Joshua, just a bigger man, maybe he's able to keep Colton at bay a little bit more. Garland's effort was there. I thought Garland was really good last night.
Determined, yeah.
Yeah, just making a lot of things happen. Unfortunately for him on that play, that was a bad sequence, and you could just feel the confidence there that, you know, they couldn't get the puck out, and Colorado again continued to turn up the heat, and that's the Avs getting a goal from lower in the lineup, and I know the Canucks got a defenseman goal, so maybe that is a push in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, the Joshua one is curious to me, and Rick Tocchet earlier in the week saying something to the effect of they're going to be really cautious here, that if it means keeping him out for an extra 3 or 5 days, that's how they're going to do it with Dakota Joshua. So we keep thinking that one of these days he's going to appear at practice and we'll get a better sense that that's how close he is, but not there yet with that player. So they would like to have had him, without a doubt they didn't, but I don't know that, you know, that one addition to the lineup would have swung the game in the Canucks' favor.
Yeah, Patrick Alvin with his 10 to 14 days, that would mean 4 to 8 days from here if we're still on that timeline for Joshua. And then lastly, I would like it noted, a Canuck had a Gordie Howe hat trick last night. And has it come up here at all?
No, no.
Wasn't a great night for Big Nikita.
It was a bizarre night for Nikita Zadorov. Because to the eye, he was everywhere. He was doing all sorts of things, and a goal and an assist, and then not much of a fight, but it does go into the books as a fighting major and avenging the Manson hit on JT Miller, so doing what he does, and that's part of his role here. But at the end of the night, like, I was a little surprised when I looked under the hood and saw he had a team worst Corsi for 15%. And we talked about the fact that Juulsen was on the ice for all four goals, two on the power play, two at evens. Zadorov was out there for the two even strength goals as a pairing with Juulsen. So, you think, hey, the guy scores, that's great, and he's hitting and he's fighting. But a Corsi of 15%, I mean, when he wasn't hitting and scoring, he was spending the night, the rest of the night defending and not doing the best job of that. So, a little curious there. But again, I think that speaks to Juulsen, Zadorov. You know, that's a third pair, and they got absolutely worked by the Colorado Avalanche. And so how much confidence do you have in those guys moving forward? And that's why I would think that if Tyler Myers does have the green light, we probably see a new look on defense as early as Saturday.
Said last night on the pregame show, Zadorov in the playoffs is either going to be feast or famine, I think. I think you're going to have either really some tire fire nights and then some really great nights where his physicality works. So going to be interesting.
Right. And I'll take my $5 tomorrow at Northlands for the McKayev goal.
Oh, well, he said the same thing, though. He had the same prediction. Who are you collecting? Well, no,
he I'm said he wasn't. I'm giving you money. I was going to lay money down at the casino. You were never the middleman.
I told you guys, I said, McKayev breaks the schneid tonight.
So did he, though. He agreed with you.
Okay. You owe money, then. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, guys.
So Carson Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group. You can text us 778-402-9680. And join us Saturday, April 20th from noon to 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano. Bro, do your playoffs. A media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason Botchford. Point forward to our city's return to the playoffs. First time in 9 years. We'll share some memories. Tell some stories, take some audience questions. The matinee was going to perform.
Not just a media event, media and music event.
That's right. Yeah. And we're going to raise some money as well for mental health services here in British Columbia. We'll let you know about tickets here soon, early next week. And we hope to see you on April 20th, 12 to 5 at the Hollywood Theater.
Can't wait.
Whitecaps have a schedule.
For the League's Cup.
For the League's Cup.
Yes. Once again, wouldn't you know it, they're in a freaking group with LAFC. We've known that for a while. But we didn't know the date for the home game at BC Play Stadium. And it's not Tigris. That's the good news, folks. They get to avoid Tigris
please,
this year.
Thank you.
It's Club Tijuana, which, as Tijuana. I pointed out on social, the one interesting nuance there is often because the Caps know their surface better than visiting teams do, particularly teams that are used to playing on grass, like the Liga MX teams. This is the one, I believe, Liga MX team that plays on artificial turf. So it's not as much of a strange thing for them to jump into BC Place, I don't think, as it is for some of the other clubs. But should be interesting. August the 3rd, mm-hmm. hosting Club Tijuana.
And Caps in Dallas Saturday. Undefeated still. They win and a draw so far through two MLS matches. The draw here at home against Charlotte. The win on the road against San Jose. It'd be a tidy bit of business if Dallas they were to come back 2-0-1.
Yeah, and Dallas is middling to start, so might be a chance to jump on Dallas and get a win. And my goodness, if they could come back undefeated, just even undefeated after three games with two of them on the road without Vanni Sartini on the touchline, I mean, that'd be success.
Did I screw that up, 2-0-1? We put the draws first in soccer?
It depends on the site. Traditionally, it's draws first, but North America is trying to change that, and I'm not against it. There's a lot of world soccer things that I'm for holding on to in North America. Putting the draws second is going to screw up with more North American fans than it is going to convert them. So let's just stay geographically consistent.
How about this one? Mm. And we may be too far gone now, but I can remember Bobby Leonarduzzi mentioning this to us 1 year during President's Week. The use of terms like United and things that were just straight taken from European soccer. Like, if we could do it all over again, would it be the DC Football Club as opposed to DC United?
Oh, football in itself, though. You'd have to quibble with football then, right?
I guess.
Or the DC whatever.
No, I'm for it because it's like
Real Salt Lake. Like,
would it be weird if there was a European baseball team called the Red Sox? Would you flinch at that?
A little, yeah.
Well, the Sox thing is a baseball tradition.
Then pick a different color.
Well, sure. But even if you said that, the Sox, you'd be like, oh, the Sox part, that's stealing.
Brown Sox doesn't really have a ring to it.
Blue Sox sounds weird. Like, who wears
green
blue socks?
Nobody wears green.
White.
So.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. You forget about that team.
Well, and were they not once upon a time the Cincinnati Red Stockings? Like,
yes. Oh, I've got a good one.
Baseball,
seriously.
And its fascination.
The Silver Sox. The Silver Sox. I like it. The Las Vegas Silver Sox. Watch, the A's are going to change their name.
Football south of the border, Bobby Wagner, Seahawks legacy player, is off to Washington. Boy, the Commanders have been, speaking of bad names, Commanders. Oh.
Terrible, terrible.
The Commanders have been busy in free agency, so the future Hall of Famer signs there. I would suspect that this is it for Bobby. Frankly, I know how much he's meant to the 12s. I know how heartwarming it was to bring him back after that year with the LA Rams, but as I watched last year, I felt he was part of the problem on run defense. Here's the good news for the Hawks. They have now signed a starting player from another team. We mentioned yesterday they finally got into signing free agents from other teams, backups. Now they have a starter in safety, Rayshon Jenkins, ex of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, you'll remember the Hawks have released Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, two of the three safeties they played last year. Jenkins actually led all safeties last season with a minus 5.6 receptions over expected allowed. So he was pretty nifty in coverage last year. I'm not sure he's the true man cover safety guy, but he should help alongside, I suspect, Julian Love is going to play a fair bit.
He can ball hawk a bit. He had a pick six.
Yeah. So some progress being made there. They're bringing in a couple of one-time top 10 linebacker picks. Devin White of Tampa Bay, who was a big part of that Super Bowl that Tom Brady won. And Isaiah Simmons, ex of the Cardinals and the Giants, who should be the prototypical modern-day defender. 6'4". 240, can run like the wind, can cover, long arms, should be a do-everything player, just hasn't figured it out yet. But we'll see where the Hawks go from there. And a quarterback trade with Desmond Ridder moving from Atlanta after he has flunked out there to Arizona to back up Kyler Murray. And how about the Joe Flacco story? NFL Comeback Player of the Year, controversially over DeMar Hamlin, of course. He parlays that into a one-year deal worth up to $8.7 million to go be the backup in Indianapolis. Well, I say the backup, but that's assuming Anthony Richardson, their first-round pick from 2023, wins the starting job. He got hurt last year and missed most of the season, so maybe another comeback tour de force here from Joe Flacco, Super Bowl winner.
And the Seahawks are just going to go with the one quarterback, I think, this year. If Geno gets hurt, they can, right. You know, Rayshon Jenkins, he's a safety. He can probably throw
the
ball.
I think they should trade their first round pick to the Bears for Justin Fields. What do you think?
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you think that. Yeah. Yeah.
The heir apparent, Geno Smith.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Come on, John Schneider. We just signed a damn quarterback.
It's looking more and more like quarterback in the draft and high in the draft, Blake.
But you still need somebody else.
At 60, you know, at 16, maybe they even move up. Like, this, that could be fun. If they go into draft weekend without more quarterbacks, you and everybody else who follows the team are going to be on pins and needles. It'll be great.
But here's the problem, that you've completely lost all leverage if you do that. Like,
a little bit.
Like, you need to sign a journeyman right now, so that you've got some cover for that draft pick. That way, when you're talking about moving down a couple spots to fleece somebody for a second rounder, they don't think you desperately need it.
Mm.
You know,
need some cover.
Yeah. Come on.
Like, my team has been seeking quarterback cover for my entire life. Yeah, 40 true. Years. Yeah. I've been waiting quarterback cover.
Yep.
Okay, poll question results
from Wednesday, we asked you who will, not should, win the Norris Trophy. Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, the people said?
People said Quinn Hughes.
Mm. Percentage?
81.
Right on the number.
Whoa!
Again, he's peaking.
No, you can tell he's not peaking when he's proud of himself like that and reacts like that.
I'm watching
when he plays it cool, when he sort of sloughs it off, that's when you know he's peaked.
I've not peaked. I tell you when I peak. I tell you? I say, I got a good early look at it, blah, 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 blah,
But you're right. He is an actor who could forget that tour de force performance as husband.
In Skoda.
In the Skoda ad. Not just driving the car, but looking on fondly as his child is on stage at the recital.
You just look over my other credits. Come on. I have an IMDb.
Other credits?
Yeah. I have an IMDb page.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Newscaster in A Perfect Child, a Hallmark movie that is
amongst the best.
Amongst the best.
Everybody says when they rank the Hallmark movies, that one does very, very well. And Perfect Child.
The Newscaster was amazing.
Oh, wow. So you were at a desk or you were on location?
No, I was in the studio somewhere. I don't remember.
Jet says they'll find a way to give it to Makar. Whether we elect or not, we all know it's coming. I'm not so sure, Jet. We discussed this yesterday. I think Quinn Hughes is far more known around the league this year. The worm has turned there.
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
Cranky Canucks says, got to say Hughes, since his play has done more to drive the Canucks to this unexpected year, while the Avs have a top line doing much of the heavy lifting. That was a common comment, and it's not wrong. As great as Cale Makar is, you take a look at that top Colorado line, what Nathan MacKinnon is doing, and, you know, as Jeff said earlier in the program, Rantanen gets totally overshadowed, but that's one of the best players in the world. And, you know, they are the drivers. And I think you could argue that Quinn Hughes is the Canucks driver. So we'll see how it shakes out. But again, finish ahead of Makar in points, Canucks finish ahead of the Avalanche. I think you feel real good about your chances. If you slip on one of those metrics, and 15 games left, lots could happen, then I might be a little more nervous for him. Errors and omissions from Wednesday's program and beyond. Well, see, here's the problem with guys like Yerky. And we love Yerky.
Yeah. Too smart. Too smart.
Well, also too officious. Too looking to catch one of us.
Gotcha.
In an air.
He's a gotcha
guy.
Exactly,
a gotcha guy. Mm-hmm. Hate that gotcha journalism you practice here, Keith. He wanted to call Blake on ESPN hockey host Arda Okal.
Yeah.
Because Arda's Turkish, and that would not be the old country Turkish pronunciation of his last name.
Ushal.
Yeah. But much like many of us
Sekrish,
who have angleized our name. Yeah. Exactly.
No relation to Andre.
This is not Sekrish and Preche.
Yeah, exactly.
As a, you know, as my family in Roma would attest to. It's Italian.
Right. So is there another? So, in fact, not an error, not an omission.
Talk to Arda, Yerky.
Yeah,
your beef
exactly.
is with Arda,
anything
not with me.
Else, Grady? Yeah.
Yes, Matt, on
any
you.
Other fake news from the listeners on our errors and omissions?
No. However, when discussing the Canucks' 9-game homestand yesterday, you referred it to it as a epic 9-game road trip.
Oh.
Mm. You're too old for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are the guys running.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to us, Canucks Conversation, Rinkwide Vancouver, wherever you get your podcast. Follow on social. That's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. We are live 11:30 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So check that out. Thank you for all the feedback on the live pregame we did yesterday from Park. And, of course, support those community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.